Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Dale Smith and Marsha Waters. How are you guys?
Great, thanks.
Yeah, good, thank you.
Excellent. What we're going to do today is we're going to continue on our chat. I think last week we were talking a wee bit about Flavour Active, the company, and I really want to talk a lot more this week about the products that you've got. Let's have a look at some of them. The first one on the list that I've got in front of me is volatile acidity, or you guys call it ethyl acetate. I can never pronounce these ones because it's always, you've got to get the A's and the E's right.
Volatile acidity is the most common elements of volatile acidity are acetic acid, mm-hmm. So that's the vinegar part, and also ethyl acetate. So that's the characteristics that reminds you of nail varnish or solvent.
Is it nail varnish in itself? Because my kids are, it's the holidays at the moment, my kids have just been out playing with nail varnish. They're just painting everything with nail varnish at the moment. So
I think you need to be at home to stop that straight away.
Yeah, that's what I told them.
It's about ethyl acetate, is that sweet smell, that sweet salty smell you get from nail varnish.
Sweet salty smell.
Solvent.
I was going to say, yeah. Okay, sweet solvent smell from nail varnish, not nail varnish removed, but the nail varnish itself.
Nail varnish itself, because nail varnish is actually in a solvent anyway, and that solvent evaporates off when it dries, and that's what's actually coming out. So that's what it reminds you of anyway. Mm.
Is it the same chemical or is it similar?
It's very similar. It's not exactly the same.
Okay, and you put both of these in, don't you? The acetic acid and the ethyl acetate. Is that how you pronounce it?
Acetate.
Why not just one or the other, or why both? Is it because that's the two chemicals that come
out? That's the two chemicals. It's probably even a little more complex than that, but these are the two key chemicals that are involved in making you detect volatile acidity.
You see, I'm aware of VA from two main sources. Old Barolos, for example, have normally got quite high VA to them, as people say. And the other one I find, I've had it explained to me anyway, is sweet wines, because the yeast, as they're doing the fermentation, is under a lot of pressure. Something like a sauterne where the alcohol's getting up to 13 degrees, and it's still mega sweet. That's a horribly poisonous environment for yeast, and they tend to struggle a bit. And that's where I understand VA can come from as well, because with sauternes, you often get a sort of a gingery note on the back of the throat, which I had a winemaker, Herman Seyfried from New Zealand, he makes some pretty nice sweet wines, he said was a VA-type component. Does that all sound something like...
Yes, and a certain amount of volatile acidity is permitted.
Yep, that it lifts the wine.
And it gives a certain complexity, but too much is wrong. You know, it actually overpowers the wine and, makes it smell and taste less pure wine and other factors. I mean, this is something that is caused by yeast. And I think what's interesting is because there's such a trend to natural wines or using wild yeasts as opposed to more specific yeasts, we're going to see more and more of these kind of potential off notes and off flavours in wines.
Okay. The other type of yeast that people often see is Brettanomyces. Or Brett, as they say, sweaty saddles, or so I sometimes get it as a sort of a leathery flavour, I think, as well. That's why, if I smell leather in the wine, I'm usually thinking something along the lines of maybe there was a little bit of Brett somewhere along the path. But I noticed in your one, you also call it stale cheese.
Well, Brettanomyces is even more complex than volatile acidity, and it's not just one pure chemical that we can isolate. So at the moment we've created it, we're recreating it by using this phenolic and also isovaleric. So that gets the a bit of the complexity and the sort of herbal character and also the sweaty character.
Yeah. Cheese, just out of curiosity, this is because I was tasting this the other day. Chablis can sometimes have a cheesy note to it. Have you ever noticed it? Yeah, some people go, it's minerality, it's fabulous. To me, it smells slightly cheesy. I had one guy once describe it as his wife's slippers. Yeah, yeah. Nice wines, don't get me wrong. Especially if you've got a foot thing going on. Would that potentially be a?
That's not necessarily a fault.
No. But is it a Brettanomyces thing?
Not necessarily. I personally often get some kind of lactic character from white Burgundies, whether it's Chablis or all the way down to Mâcon. Yes.
Yeah. So you think it's more of a malolactic fermentation type thing?
May well be. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I hadn't really thought about it as malolactic, actually. But, yeah, that's probably what it is, isn't it? It's that cheesy, slightly, yeah.
Slightly dairy.
Yeah, okay. So this Brettanomyces thing that you've got here is you've got stale cheese, but for me, it's that sweaty,
leathery
smell. Okay, and again, similar type of thing, I presume. A little bit of Brettanomyces is quite nice, too much. But the trouble with this is beauty's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
Yeah, entirely. As in everything. But what's interesting about this is, like I said earlier, is giving people the opportunity to taste it when it's exaggerated. So if they come across it again in wines, they know what it is that they're experiencing. And, of course, people can still make up their own minds as to whether they enjoy a certain level or not. But at least they've had the opportunity to know what it is that they're actually smelling and tasting.
Yeah, yeah. And the other one, this is one I get a little bit, not confused, but I struggle sometimes. Reduced sulfur compounds, that's the one, the next one. And that's, to me, reduced, I can tell the smell of wine, I go, yeah, that's very reduced. I can tell when it's reduced. But sulfur, I don't always think of reduced and sulfur. I know they're similar because it's sulfur chemistry that can create reduced smells, but I don't really get struck match sometimes as the smell some people talk about with reduced smells. You've called it rotten drains gas.
Well, there are a whole range of sulfur or off smells that start from too much sulfur.
Yeah.
And then it depends how what happens to it, how much oxygen or lack of oxygen there is in the bottle. We've kind of picked on this one here, although there are a variety of others, because I guess it's potentially the most common, and it's also a surprising fault that is more common than people expect in a whole host of wines that are out there, because it's something that if you have a screw cap is and therefore you have a lack of oxygen, it's something that is more likely to happen.
Mm. Although some of the new screw caps where they've got the
they can control the
oxygen ingress a bit more.
Yeah, I think the industry is moving ahead.
Yeah, that's the weird thing is people sort of expect corktane, well, they didn't expect it, but you know what to deal with. And a lot of people think the screw caps, because it's a man-made product, it's not going to have any problems associated with it. But you're right, sulfur dioxide can be an issue under, and especially the old screw caps anyway, was a real nightmare.
Yeah.
Okay, I always found if you let the wine breathe a bit, that often cleans it up. But it depends. Not always.
Sometimes depends exactly. Depends what's in there. Or you stick a copper coin in it, it can clean it up. All those kind of things.
Yeah, it's so hard getting a proper copper coin these days. No, because there's no copper in the modern coins, is there?
Oh, it still works. Still works for me. You ought to try it, yeah.
I think 1960 something was the last time copper.
But there's something that works in a tuppenny bit, I can assure you.
Is it?
Yeah, give it a go.
Oh, okay, I've got copper I used when I was doing plumbing in my house. I know that's pure copper.
Ah,
that's a good idea.
And
you put it in, and it's shiny when it goes in, as opposed to copper coins, which go in really dirty and come out real shiny. And
people don't like to drink it after. Yeah, that's right.
You know the wine's got a bit more body to it. Okay, that's cool. That's cool. What are this? Like, you've gone for this sort of stinky drain. They call them McCaptans, don't they? And McCaptans are if you go into sulfur chemistry, and my understanding, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but you go into sulfur chemistry and you can get stinky smells. And if you if it's stinky and mercaptans haven't formed, then oxygen will often fix it. But once the mercaptans form, you're stuck. You can't fix it after that. Is that right? Or
no, that's about right. It's once mercaptans are there, but you have to wait for the sulfurs really just to volatile off, just to leave. Or naturally break down.
Oh, so letting it breathe will...
It does help, because the sulfurs are quite volatile, so they have a tendency just to come out the bottle, or better yet, pour a glass, and it will, because of the amount of headspace you've got there, it will come out and it will just evaporate off.
So what you're saying, pour a glass, give it to your missus, give it an hour, and then finish the bottle.
Well, you might be saying.
Your missus will have a more sensitive sense of smell, I bet.
She has. She's got fabulous taste. That's why she married me. Jane will be editing this. She'll deny that, by the way. And the last one you guys got is cork taint as well, which is probably the most common one, although that incidence, I've noticed, has been decreasing a bit. Right up till last night, yesterday, when I had opened up quite a nice Merso, and it was just corked, and it was like, oh, man, because I like Merso. It was like, oh, so disappointing. But Riocas, I always find Riocas are the most likely wines that I see these days that are going to get cork taint, because, I don't know, they just seem to use cheap corks, or maybe they're aged for a long period of time, or I don't know.
I'm not sure. Maybe they do use cheap corks. I would have thought that Iberian, anything produced in Iberia, should have access to pretty good corks.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Because they've got all the trees nearby. But Riocas are the ones I noticed. I used to think it was because, you know, when you're drinking Grand Reserve Riocas, you know, they're 18 years old, and the industry cleaned up a lot of the problems. And then, but these wines were bottled before the problems were. But they just keep coming and coming and coming. You know, I just...
Yes, I guess there will always be a potential, for instance, of cork taint.
Mm.
It must be pretty much impossible to guarantee completely... No,
you can't, because I've heard of incidents of cork taint in screw caps, simply because the mould or whatever was in the building itself got into bins. And
the active chemical that causes cork taint is trichloranazole, and a tiny amount of that, just in a nanogram, is enough to contaminate an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So you don't need much to cause a contamination problem. And it can occur outside of a cork, it can occur in bottles, it can occur in areas that have been stored badly, and it migrates through a lot of different materials, just because of the size of the chemical as well. It just goes through most things. So it's something you do need to still be careful of, but you're right, its incidence is reducing quite a lot because of the changeover from corks to screw caps.
Yeah. I've heard of it even coming in from... I won't say who the producer was, because the wine never made it to market because of good testing. But they ran their wines all through one of those depth filters. They ran it through a depth filter, and the depth filter itself had the cork taint in it. So they ran their wine through the filter, put screw caps on the top, and it picked up all the cork taint on the way through. But, you know, because it's all batch controlled, once they worked out what was going on, they could pull the entire batch that went through that particular... that put it at the filter, so a bit of a disaster, really, isn't it? Okay, so these are the products, but you know, I found out about this because WSET London Bridge were trialling it a wee while ago, and that's where I heard about these products. But who do you think the market is for this type of the wine product in particular?
I think WSET is a good thing to mention, because certainly educators, people who are teaching anybody who's interested in wine, and anybody who's working in wine, certainly we're getting a lot of interest from educators all around the world, and then wine producers, certainly people who are interested in how their wine is perceived by the consumer. So tend to be the larger scale wine producers. I think that as people get to know that this product is available, I think there'll be... I think that actually will be eventually a consumer interest in this as well, just out of personal interest. But at the moment, it's starting from larger producers and educators.
Okay, so you think mainly educators, maybe consumers. I've been playing around some quite expensive kit, you know, Coravan with their piece of quite expensive kit. It's quite nice. So that, and that's for a consumer. So there are people who are into that sort of thing. How much does the kit, well, how much do you think the kit will retail for?
We're going to be retailing it for £55 plus VAT.
Is that for four of the...
That's for a pack that has volatile acidity, mercaptan, Brettanomyces and cork taint in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's available at wine@flavouractive.com for any inquiries, and would obviously be interested in talking to anybody who are groups who think they might have some volume, because no doubt we can do something on the price for that.
Yeah. That's quite a strong price, isn't it? That's, I mean, it's like, that's quite expensive, because you can buy a faults kit for about 50 quid as well, which has, you know, you can use time and time again. So from a pricing point of view, you know, it's, yeah, it's quite, it's at the high end of where I would have thought the product would be.
It is, because it's a high quality product. It's also a stable product as well. So these are actually powdered flavours in a stable format, which will last quite a long time. Whereas another kit, which is based on liquid, it will break down, flavours will change over time. You have to use it within a couple of months. Our kit will last 2 years quite comfortably. And it's all produced to pharmaceutical standards as well. We have a facility in North Wales which produces everything under good farms, good manufacturing practices.
Okay, then. I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.